It's Thursday, April 11th, 2024. This is the Hermetic Hour. I'm your host, Poke Runyon. And tonight, as call-in guest, we have America's foremost ceremonial magician, Maestro Lon Milo Duquette. The primary subject Lon will discuss in his latest project, a color-it-yourself version of his and his wife Constance's 1998 Tarot of Ceremonial Magic. The book and the tarot deck was published by U.S. Games, but this new book will probably be by another publisher. The new project, the Color It Yourself Tarot Deck, is in line with his Chicken Kabbalah, the Custodian of Magical Toys concept. By coloring your own tarot deck, you not only personalize it, but you also internalize all the magical symbolism. And this is not a new idea. It originated with the Golden Dawn in the 1870s and was perpetuated by Paul Case in his Builders of the Addendum in the 1920s. This is a fascinating subject, and you have an opportunity to get the pre-publication preview of the master's work. So tune in with us and let the maestro get your creative juices flowing. Are you with us, maestro?
I am, if you can hear me.
I can hear you very well, loud and clear.
Okay. I can hear you too. Thanks for having me on.
Well, anyway, it's our honor. It really is our honor. Last week
we did a rerun of our show on the second edition of your Tarot of Ceremonial Magic.
It first came out in
1995.
Anyway,
I also have a copy of the tarot deck here.
This new project that you've got,
can you tell us about it and give us a rundown on why you decided to do it and what you intend to accomplish with it?
Well, first of all, many years ago, and I talk about, the consecration of the deck and things like that. The tarot was sort of an adjunct to my magical studies and magical practices. And I was, along about 1970, 71, 72, I took the Builders of the Addendum tarot fundamentals. It was a correspondence course where you do color your own tarot deck, or at least the greater arcana. And I have to say, it was a wonderful, mind-blowing experience in the BOTA lessons. Had you spend 2 weeks on each card, the coloring itself, doesn't take that much time. And they had very detailed coloring instructions. But it was the collateral material that you were memorizing as you were working for 2 weeks on a single card. So you knew the King scale of colors that you're dealing with, and you knew the Hebrew letter, and so you were learning Kabbalah and the tarot simultaneously, and it was an ingenious thing to do. And then when you dig into the Golden Dawn, everybody in the Golden Dawn was or at a certain degree level was required to make their own tarot deck. And in a sense, it's a magical operation, not so much for you to create in your hand cardboard thing, but to construct the tarot within yourself, because it's an internal structure in the same way as the Hebrew alphabet is an internalized. You're harmonizing literally with the dynamics of the dimension that we're living in. And along about 1988, we had a Monday night magic class for the OTO lodge in our home. I thought, why don't we make a tarot deck and, spend time, memorizing all of the astrological and the collateral magic material, because they're angels and spirits and Enochian spirits and everything that are all resident just because of the harmonizing structure, the universal harmonizing structure of the tarot. So every tarot card has just, it's like a little apartment house of spirits. So it's just started as an exercise for our Monday night magic class, and I gave everybody a couple stacks of blank index cards, and away we went. And over a period of time, I kept revising it, putting the right astrological dates that are associated with each card, and just writing that information on the card itself. The artwork, in a sense, was secondary to all the collateral information, like each one of the 36 small cards, the 2s through 10s of each of the 4 suits, each have a day and a night spirit of the Goetia living there.
Let me interrupt you for a second with a technical question.
Now,
I got the book right here, so I'll open it up. Angels and Gods of the New Millennium, and that was yours in 97. And my copy here is dated 8/10/97. Now, in the Angels and Gods of the New Millennium, you published something that we ended up calling the Master Rectangle. Now, what this is a complete, a rectangular chart of all the astrological correspondences of the Shemiyam Parash, the Goetia, and I don't know whether you have the Enochian in here or not. But primarily, what? Do you?
Yeah, no Enochian on the rectangle.
No Enochian. One. But this, because the Golden Dawn system, which the OTO uses, and the Golden Dawn still uses, is sidereal, not tropical. This is, of course, I think that this master rectangle is essential. And are you going to publish, I know you didn't, when Angels and Demons was republished, they left out the master rectangle because it's a color print and it was too expensive. Now, are you going to be able to publish it along with your new tarot book?
Yeah, absolutely. Only it'll
be
in black and white. It'll be uncolored, but it definitely will be in there, because then in this sense it's just like the table of contents for all of this. And I could not publish that. Color printing, as much as I'd love to do it, and as much as Weiser probably still has the plates for it, It even had to be a fold out, and
yeah.
So that was sort of cost prohibitive, but it's there, and I'll probably have a contact address of some kind where I'd be happy to send somebody a file of the color one, a PDF.
Oh yeah.
Or, yeah.
Well, that answers my technical question, because that was a kind of an aside. So that was an intrusion. So why don't you go ahead and continue with what you were developing?
Well, anyway, U.S. Games Systems picked up the tarot deck after I finally got black and white images, at least to my satisfaction, and then Constance colored them along strict, you know, Kabbalistic color table charts, and she fleshed them out. So it's a teamwork effort. And I, a friend of mine and I drove from Southern California to Miami, and we pitched the deck and the book that went with it. We pitched the book to Weiser, and Weiser is still the publisher of the book Tarot of Ceremonial Magic. It's still in print. But U.S. Games, after I think 5 years, let it go out of print, and it was out of print for 3 or 4 years, and then there was an interim publisher, just a dear friend of mine, published what they called the Babylon edition, and now Magical Omaha publishes the Tarot of Ceremonial Magic deck in full color for, I think, around $39, so it's Magical Omaha. But the point I wanted to make with this book is that it is a luxury. It is a privilege for those of us who have gone through, I guess you could say, the ordeal. It's an initiatory ordeal of understanding the structure and the various magical implications of a tarot deck. And a project like this, even if you don't feel that you're an artist, and even if you don't feel that you've got the time to do it, nevertheless, as you make your own tarot deck step by step, page by page, like I've got laid out in the book, you are harmonizing yourself. You are synchronizing yourself with the steps of creation as are outlined in the Sefer Yetzirah. You're literally building from the a central point of negativity. You're creating dimensional space and the landmarks that go with objective reality. And now it sounds like we're biting off a whole bunch of stuff there, and in a way we are, but you don't even have to think of it that way. By creating your fool card and your hanged man card and your judgment card, you're literally creating up and down and right and left and front and back. Just create those cards in that order. Have them out of the way. Then you create the six walls of the cube that those three dimensions create up, down, right, left, north, south, east, west. And so you create those tarot cards next. Not only are those cards in harmony with the spectrums of the dimensions themselves, but there are musical notes that represent those vibratory levels of consciousness. Along with the color spectrum, there's musical notes. So while you're making these cards in sort of a little artsy-crafty thing, okay, there are meditations that go with this. When you get tired of squinting your eyes and coloring in cards and stuff, you actually, there are chants. There are Hebrew letter chants that correspond to the dimensions that you're working with, right, left, north, south, east, west. So the greater arcana is divided just in the same way as the 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet, the three mother letters, the seven double letters, and the 12 simple letters. And that's how we create the cards. That's the order we create them with. We just don't start at the beginning of the linear beginning of a tarot deck like you get when you open up the deck. No. This tarot deck is a universe. You're holding a dynamic universe in your hands. And this is how the universe developed. And so we create the cards in that order. And I've written it in such a way that I hope it becomes addictive.
Yeah.
You know, once you start an artistic process, the project takes on a life of its own. Almost any.
Well, now
project.
let me ask you a question. I have, of course, sitting right here on my table, I have a tarot deck. I have the Tarot of Ceremonial Magic. And I have the Magus card on the carton, and the Magus looks an awful lot like your wife. Now, these cards that you have are all colored. They're all colored. So, are you changing the whole color system with this new deck?
No.
So a person can take a shortcut. I know you probably have the instructions on the color, but they can take a shortcut by just copying the cards that have already been published, can't they?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. As a matter of fact, that'd be a great shortcut. But if you don't have the deck, what got me started on this, folks,
Is US Games still selling the deck?
No. No, I got the rights back to it, and the rights are now with Magical Omaha.
They're going to go to Omaha. I'm going to order some steaks and hamburgers from them. Omaha steaks and hamburgers.
Anyway, that sounds great.
So we
just moved recently, and I had uncovered my original uncolored deck that I took to Miami to pitch this to U.S. Games.
Yeah,
and I turned them over to a friend of mine, a graphics person in Canada, who had cleaned them up. And so all 78 cards are in the book. You can color them right in the book, or you can take them down to the print shop and have them printed out on cardstock, and you can work on them that way. But
yeah.
Or you can just.
But
buy,
you're not.
Buy
you're not. Deck. You're not selling. You're not selling a blank deck. A blank deck with just black and white cards.
No, the blank deck at the moment, and probably will stay there, is in the book itself. And they're
oh
pretty,
yeah, well, yeah.
Yeah. Each card is represented big enough that and not in the gutter of the book, so you could take them down to the coffee shop and for a dime a piece.
Yeah.
Okay. You can get you can even enlarge them if you want.
Yeah, that's good. Let me mention something from my background on this situation. Back about I think it was about 40 years ago, Pat Zaleski from the New Zealand Golden Dawn visited me in my place in Pasadena at that time and spent about a week with me. And I remember one session at about 2 o'clock in the morning at Montsalvat in Pasadena. Pat gave me the secret of coloring the tarot cards, because Pat wanted me, he wanted me to do the Golden Dawn deck. He and a lot of people were very disappointed with Wang, with Mr. Wang's version of it, and Wang did not have the colors right on the Golden Dawn deck that he did at all. So Pat gave me a blank Golden Dawn deck, and he really wanted me to go about coloring it.
You should have.
And I should have, but I was working on the Cypher manuscript at that time with him, and we got very involved in that. But anyway, what I want to say was that Pat said, Polk, he said, there's only one person who knew the color formula, because Rigardi had apparently known it but forgotten it, and only one person knew it, and that was Aleister Crowley. And Crowley gave it to Freda Harris when she did she painted the Thoth cards. And the formula was that the colors of the cards, primary color was the path that the card was attributed to, and the secondary color was the sphere that the path went to. Now, that's what Pat told me, and he said that secret had been lost and that Wang never got it. Well, Rigardi must have had it at one time, because he colored his entire tarot deck, and Rigardi loaned it to Doties of the Adidom, and somehow or other, and they photographed it, and they had it, and then the original was stolen by one of the Solar Lodge people. They stole it from Rigardi's house in Studio City, and it got burned up in the fire out there in the Quonset hut out there in the desert. And Rigardi lost it. Yeah. Oh God. And he went back to BOTA, and he said then my tarot deck got stolen and burned up. Can I have access to your copy? And they told him no. They refused him. So Rigardi lost. He lost the color scheme and everything, and that was gone. And it was terrible. And he had colored the whole Golden Dawn deck. But the Book of Thoth, I've always wondered why the book. One of the reasons why the Book of Thoth, Freda Harris's artwork and everything, why it was so powerful. And powerful because it's derived from the Minuta Mundum, from the Tree of Life. Yeah. Anyway, I just thought I'd share that.
Wow, that is very interesting. A certain amount of that is carried through even in Waits, the Smith deck has a, you can see a little of that poking through, you know, like in the bright yellows from the Fool. That would put the Fool leaping into the gray of Hokma. You know, and there's you don't see much gray in the But anyway,
the Golden Dawn used a lot of Greek mythology symbolism, which the weight deck doesn't use. And I'm really, really excited about this project of yours, and I'm thinking that maybe I'll go ahead and try and color it out. Of course, the system that we are using, that I'm using in the OTA, the system that I'm using is tropical, based on tropical astrology. So I don't know what, it'd be a tremendous job to convert what you've got to tropical astrology. And maybe I shouldn't do that.
Not all that hard. I encourage everybody if you're not interested in Goetia, if you're not interested in the Enochian thing, or if you're not interested in angels and Chimhamperish, just feel free to color over anything on the deck that you want. The important thing is that you're making a tarot deck. You know, and I encourage people to just customize this thing all you want. And if you don't, if you follow a planetary assignment system that's different than this one, color it in and draw your own planets and stuff in. But so much of it is tied to each other. So much of it is self-referential, like the 36 small cards or the 36 squares of the Grand Cross of all four elemental tablets in the Enochian system.
Yeah.
And the court cards. And if you're interested in that, I've got that material in the appendices so that you can get started on doing that if that interests you.
Yeah.
I wrote a thing. I know you're not calling your guests to have them read something to you, but I've got just one page that is titled "What to Expect" from this, and it might sort of tell you more than me, him and ha here, if you'd allow me to read that to you.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. It says, what to expect, and it has a little epigraph that says, you do not learn tarot, tarot teaches you. And that's a quote from Rabbi Lamed Ben Clifford. If you fancy yourself a fortune teller, or if you just casually read cards for yourself or others, you're probably amazed at how often cards respond to questions or personal issues with uncannily accurate insights and synchronicities. What is it about these 78 pieces of painted cardstock that transform relatively ordinary people into drooling mystics and surprisingly talented soothsayers? Many tarot readers tell me they actually sense a conscious life and a palpable spiritual force resident in the cards. An intelligence that not only answers questions, but often seems to ferret out unspoken issues lurking behind the questions we think we're asking. This is such a common phenomenon that overly superstitious dabblers often get spooked and never want to touch the cards again. There are very good reasons why tarot seems to trigger psychic responses in so many who choose to seriously work with it as part of their spiritual practice. This little book is intended to first demonstrate how and why tarot is the perfect reflection of the cosmos and the objective universe we live in. And secondly, to help you install this perfection within yourself so you may come to a better understanding of what an awesome cosmic entity you really are.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Now, I'm imagining a magic circle.
I'm basing my imagination here on our magic circle that we have. On one side, we have it's elemental, and then you turn it over, and it's celestial. And we have all the degrees, 365 degrees of the year, the zodiac
and everything, all around the circle. And frankly, I can see laying out the cards all the way around the circle, laying them out where they fit degree-wise.
Have you read the manuscript? You're reading my mind here because we've got meditations and little rituals to go with it. That's why
I started talking about it. I figured you would say, oh yeah, I've got something like that in there. Yeah, because to kind of mention a friend and fellow adept, Lady Jo Carson is doing a Farfarian tarot deck, and she's done that. She's got a beautiful carpet, you know, a sort of a cloth, like a blanket that you lay out, and it's got the whole circle on it, and you can put all the cards down on the circle and around it. And of course, as you probably know, Fred Adams was adamant about relating the tarot to the celestial sphere.
Right.
And
for about the last 20 years, I guess now, I've traveled a great deal, and I don't travel around with a bunch of magical tools, but I do travel with my tarot deck, and I do magic on the road because a hotel room is just the perfect monastic environment to do magic, plus there's room service. I've made my magic circle out of my tarot decks. Not only that, when I travel overseas or in China, I try to determine who the local Enochian gods are, okay, because there's 91 parts of the earth. And my tarot deck has the holy table on the back of every card, but the aces, the four aces are the four elemental tablets, and the 16 court cards are the subangles of all of those tablets. So I can do my Enochian magic just with the tarot deck too. And so it's a magical table in a box.
Yep, it certainly is. And I'm talking about something that we've done
On our end here that is a contribution to the system. That one of the problems with the traditional system is that it doesn't go any further than the sphere of Soroboshko.
In other words, the Menudum Mundum, unfortunately, the way we have it, the Tree of Life, the way we have it, is operative tarot-wise and Kameo-wise, it's operative only in the below. We don't have Hesed, and we don't have Bina, and we don't have Hokmah, we don't have the higher spheres. And the reason why we don't is because they are the furthest planet that the ancients could see with the naked eye was Saturn. And so the sphere of Sorobosco, as in the old days, and all the way up into even past, even into Copernicus, the sphere, the tree of life did not get into the higher dimensions because they couldn't imagine anything above Saturn, and so that's where it was, and so modern astrology accesses the outer planets, Neptune, Uranus, and Pluto, and medieval, ancient, and medieval astrology don't. So
right,
yeah. So what we've done, we started off with, okay, let's create Kameas, you know, magical squares for the outer planets. And in order to do that, we've got to go across the abyss, and we got to change the numerical system. So several things had to be done. And one, we had to renumber the tree of life. We had to create the tree of life before the fall. And so we changed the number on Kether. Instead of Kether being number one, Kether becomes zero. And Kether becomes zero. And once you do that, then you can fill out the outer planets above the abyss. And we did that. And then we figured about how we do the Kameas. Because when you go all the way up to Saturn, which the Kameas do, then you're up to number three, and when you go beyond number three, you're down to number two, and that doesn't work. Yeah. Here's the way we solve the problem. If you read Agrippa, you'll find he talks about something called the mirror reflection. If you take the Kameas and put them up against a mirror, they reverse themselves. And once you see that, you could go above the abyss. And then I'm not going to go too far into this because it is kind of a peritone, to use the Fred Adams' old Greek word for secret. But that the mirror reflection is the key to having the Kameas, to numbering the Kameas above the abyss.
And well, that would make a lot of sense because the area between the supernal triad 1, 2, and 3. And the rest of the tree,
yep.
it's just like a looking glass. It's just like
yeah,
a,
that's right.
Just here, and so
absolutely,
that, yeah.
And we created three new tarot cards: Unity straight up the middle, Conquest going between Gabura
going from Gabura to Hesed, that's Conquest,
and Alchemy.
Gotcha.
And those three new tarot cards, I have them, they're all colored and everything, and based primarily on Phoenician mythology.
Oh,
yeah. Well, they're in the red ray. They're in reproducing
right.
color in the red ray, and that's available, of course, on Amazon, and from our bookstore, and that's PokeRunyon.com. You can get it anyway. And I'm really looking forward to carrying your book on our bookstore when you get it out.
Oh, thank you.
Terrible.
Thank you.
Well, you know how publishing is. It'll be I got it in the editor's hands on Monday, so it'll be probably this year or a year from now before it's actually out. Please invite me back just before it comes out.
Absolutely. Yeah. We gotta promote this and get it going. And anyway, let's see what else we can
talk about here, because we got a lot of time left.
What do you think? What do you think about Crowley's Book of Thoth? And you've got a book on that, haven't you?
Yeah, I've got Understanding Aleister Crowley's Thoth Tarot, and it's probably the most popular book that I've read. It's I don't know how long ago I wrote it, but it's still in print and selling pretty well still after all these years. And Weiser is the publisher of that. Something else that I just released here in the last 9 months or so. Is I rewrote my book, my novel, Accidental Christ. And good. And not only is it longer, but it's fleshed out considerably. I'm very, very excited about it. I don't write novels.
The accidental Christ is very thought provoking, I think. And also Kant, in the accidental Christ is one of the rituals, and I think you attributed it to Constance, to your wife, and that
yes.
is yeah I am not my feet, I am that which remains, you know. It's kind of like a Tibetan chode ritual. Of course, in the Tibetan chode rituals, you feed yourself to the hungry ghosts.
Disassemble yourself and get it fed. Yeah.
Yeah, but the thing I like about the one that Constance came up with, that I am not my feet. I am not my ankles. I am not whatever. I'm that which remains. Is that you can do this all the way from your feet all the way up to your head, and the only thing I would disagree with is I would not say I am not my mind. I am that which remains, because I think the mind should survive. Anyway,
I just said brain.
Oh, brain. Well, that's okay.
I tried to stay away from mind because, you know, I'm not sure about that either.
You're right.
Brain.
Because the brain is, this is something that non-magical people just plain don't understand. The brain is the hardware.
Yes.
The mind is the software.
Is the software.
I don't understand that.
Rabbi Lamed Ben Clifford always calls it your meat brain. I can't understand this with my meat brain, you know. Accidental Christ.
That comes originally from Crowley in the Galatia, where he said the spirits of the Galatia are portions of the human brain, and
the
he should have
brain.
Said mind.
He should have,
he should have said
mind.
The human mind.
Absolutely.
He should have
yep.
said mind, yeah.
He
I think that's
yeah.
what he meant. I think that's what he meant. But Crowley was not a Jungian. He was a Freudian.
Anyway, Llewellyn now publishes, it's called An Accidental Christ. And I think you'll like how it begins so much differently and how it ends so much differently. And there's new characters. There's Pontius Pilate's wife, and there's other surprises. I think you'll probably really really enjoy.
Yeah. I think we mentioned this before, but Accidental Christ reminds me to some degree to Jack London's Star Rover. I think I mentioned this before. Yeah. Jack London's Star Rover was about convicts in San Quentin who had figured out a way to beat the straitjacket that these screws in San Quentin were putting these guys in straitjackets. They're putting them in straitjackets and just leaving them in a straitjacket. They couldn't eat. They just leaving them for days wrapped up in a straitjacket. And that was Jack London wasn't a convict, but he liked to, like to talk to guys that had been. And they said that they figured out a way to beat the jacket, and that was by projection, And they'd project. And the Star Rover is a classic. It's a classic of interplane projection, he has a past life as a Korean nobleman and all kinds of stuff. And speaking of that, I am rereading and enjoying the heck out of it, my first 2,000 years, a novel by Sylvester Viereck and his friend Eldridge. Are you familiar with that?
My first
2,000 years.
That's not the same Viereck that was Crowley.
Yeah,
Viereck.
That's the same Viereck that employed Crowley during World War I to write anti-British propaganda for his German New York newspaper. And Crowley said, in the confessions, that Viereck was an umpapa, beer-drinking German and stupid. And this novel, My First 2,000 Years, is one of the most brilliant historical novels ever written. And Viereck was certainly not an umpapa German. And anyway, it's back in print, by the way, and I want to heartily recommend it. It's the story of the wandering Jew, and Cardiphalus the wandering Jew, and he has adventures with Marcus Aurelius. And then he goes on, and then he finally has a go-round with Gilderess, the Satanist.
Yeah.
The Satanist that was Joan of Arc's boss, actually. and that's fascinating. Now, it's the first 2,000 years. It's a magical novel. I would rank it with Cabell's Jurgen as a magical novel.
Yeah,
it's that good.
Yeah. Who was the author of Jurgen?
James Branch Cabell.
Okay, yeah, all right.
Yeah, those two novels. And of course, The Accidental Christ, we got it. And like I say, that ritual, what do you call that ritual that Constance wrote?
In the book, that is resurrection, the opening section of the ritual of a 3-day entombment ceremony. So that would be the equivalent of getting someone to completely disassociate themselves with their body so that their body can be literally wrapped up like a mummy and and set aside for 3 days. It's a 3-day entombment ceremony, similar to what they speculate the Egyptians did. Where they eventually got raised with the lion's grip, you know, the lion's paw. Okay. So the person is sort of dosed psychedelically and prepared for about 3 weeks of fasting and meditation and light deprivation, and then so that they're just in a wonderful, blissful, out of it state of mind, and then they fall paralyzed but still conscious, and then are put through this initiatory process where they actually feel that they're being mourned and treated like they're dead. But
This is the House of Life.
Before they do that, though, they want to make sure that the person is no longer identifying themselves with the body. But what's so neat about it, when you read it, you sort of actually go through it yourself. You go, gee, I think I will try this before I go to sleep tonight, you know.
it's a great way to go to sleep. But
I think that's a good place to kind of end up our discussion for tonight, is to recommend to our listeners that they acquire the Accidental Christ, acquire the Accidental Christ. And if you want to read a couple of good magical novels, and My First 2,000 Years by Vyrick, and Jurgen by James Branch Cabell, and of course we're all looking forward to your new book on the tarot.
Oh, me too. I'm postpartum state, you know. I've been working on it for so long, now it's out of the door like a child.
Okay, thanks so much for coming on, Maestro, and for giving us so much stimulation, giving us the software for our hardware. And we really appreciate it, and we'll see you again soon, and take care, be well, and My best to Constance, and thanks again, and good magic. Okay.
Okay.
Good
thank
night.
You. Good night.
And all of you people out there in Block Talk Radio computer land, tune in next week for another session with the Hermetic Mysteries. And until then, we'll see you, and good magic.